through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Which quarterback's legacy is impacted the most with a win on Sunday? The championship round of the playoffs is happening this weekend. You've got four quarterbacks facing off. Against my better judgment, I will not include Chad Henne in this conversation, Jake, even though his legacy also very important. But for the purpose of this argument, I'm going to just include Patrick Mahomes. So now we're going to organize it by conference with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, and then Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. The NFC conversation is far more fascinating to me, but still very important takeaways with the AFC conversation, the young guys there. So let's break it down by player. Let's start with Patrick Mahomes, once again appearing in an AFC championship game. Now he is in concussion protocol after being forced out of the game last week. Chad Henne, the GOAT, coming in to help finish that off and take care of business against the Browns. And it doesn't feel like there's much that Patrick Mahomes has to do to prove. He is young. He has the whole world, his whole career ahead of him, and yet he's already accomplished so much. It seems like there's more at stake with Josh Allen. Before we get to him, though, let's talk about just Mahomes. What's at stake for him? What is he? Is his legacy at all impacted with a win?
Well, his impact with his legacy, it has nothing to do with does it fall? Patrick Mahomes' legacy, I don't think, is in jeopardy.
Any danger.
But what you can do is you can cement yourself from the very get-go that you are on track to be one of the greatest to ever do it. Right now, Patrick Mahomes is the only quarterback right now that is on pace or has any opportunity to truly rival Tom Brady in terms of conference championships, in terms of Super Bowl appearances. Patrick Mahomes is the only guy right now that is on that trajectory, and also at the same time having an opportunity in an offense that greatly fits his skill set to shatter and break a lot of NFL records. So when you talk about that aspect, three seasons in a row as a starter, you get to the AFC Championship game, Stacy, and two of those 3 years you get to a Super Bowl. It just further cements your legacy to the point where Patrick Mahomes would have to fall off a cliff production-wise for people to really question him as being or not being one of the greatest quarterbacks of a generation, one of the greatest quarterbacks that this league has seen. That's really the conversation that is surrounding Patrick Mahomes at this stage. I mean, we were already doing that after year three of Patrick Mahomes' career. So it would just go on to further cement that legacy and further cement him on that trajectory of really rivaling Tom Brady, which, I mean, very few people ever thought would be possible, yet here we are, Patrick Mahomes, before Tom Brady's even done, has the ability to potentially do that.
Mahomes is who I am most personally excited to see. I love watching him play. I've loved watching Andy Reid, watching this Kansas City offense, but maybe the least interesting conversation here. The most interesting one as far as the AFC is actually Josh Allen. He's had a bit of a rocky road to getting here. In 2018, he had 10 touchdowns to 12 interceptions, a completion percentage of just 52% on the year. He finished 5-6, quarterbacking for Buffalo. It wasn't great. I think that he faced from the jump the assumption, truly, he has a great arm. All the physical talent in the world, I'm not sure that he's the one. That was the conversation about him from the jump, and it didn't get much easier in 2019. He jumped up to 58.8% completion percentage, just 9 interceptions, 20 touchdowns, so doubled his touchdown total, but nothing, Jake, has been like this past season for him. This past season, he's not going to win MVP. I think that's going to go to Aaron Rodgers. I think he was worth being part of the conversation. He took such a phenomenal jump, 69.2% completion percentage. That's 10-plus percentage points higher than his previous high. 37 touchdowns, 17 touchdowns higher than the year prior to 10 interceptions, keeping that interception percentage actually at its lowest, even though that's 10 picks. That is such a huge jump for him. And he will play little brother this weekend to Patrick Mahomes, to some of the other names in the AFC moving forward. But he has taken such an impressive jump. Not only that, but it is hard not to like this Buffalo Bills team.
Yeah.
Not just for the year they've been able to have, winning the division for the first time since, what, 94, 95? But also for the season he's had.
Yeah, it is a remarkable turnaround in terms of his trajectory. I don't know if I've seen, and you could text in the Vizzy Heart Seltzer text line 710-710, throw in your thoughts here, but I don't know if I've seen a first-round quarterback take this type of dramatic turn in 1 year like Josh Allen has. Josh Allen was confirming to everybody that Josh Allen was the same player that everybody warned about during his time in Wyoming. Tremendously talented, big arm, strong, can make plays with his legs, but didn't have enough mentally to be able to make great decisions and the accuracy to be able to consistently move the ball down the field. And he confirmed that in his first two seasons, 52% completion percentage, 58% completion percentage, which was on par with what he did at Wyoming. Now he goes and works his tail off in the offseason, really dedicates himself to fixing everything, and comes out and has a tremendous year. It also goes to show how great of a coach Brian Daboll is, Stacey, a guy who deserves a lot of credit in this conversation in terms of giving him the tools and resources to make Josh Allen a better player, a more confident player, a guy who is seeing the field at a great rate in terms of being one step ahead. And when Josh Allen feels like, when Josh Allen gets confused, when Josh Allen isn't confident in what he's seeing, you can see that drop-off happen. Mm-hmm. But when he is in command and when Daboll is giving him great answers, he's as good as anybody right now in the league. And it's very impressive to watch, to see that turnaround happen for him. And he has become one of the more likable players in this league. As you said, the Buffalo Bills, certainly one of the more likable teams. And I think there is a large contingency of NFL fans that want to see the Bills go to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be one of the greatest turnarounds in terms of a young, talented rookie's trajectory from being a player considered on the outs and being a likely bust to turning everything around and being at the forefront of the conversation in terms of being one of the NFL darlings in this league.
Now, when we're talking specifically about quarterback legacy, the more interesting conference matchup is in the NFC, and I have ordered these, Jake, by the leading up to the more interesting quarterback in my mind when it comes to that legacy, which means we're starting with Tom Brady. He's already cemented himself as the GOAT. The conversation I think that happens this year with a win on Sunday is, but he did it without Belichick.
No,
but he separated himself from the success in New England. And you could always point to New England and the greatest dynasty that the NFL has seen, particularly the modern NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation was always, well, was it Belichick? Was it Brady? Was it Brady? Was it Belichick? I don't know. They were there together. Well, this year, Belichick's Pats didn't make the playoffs. And Brady's Buccaneers did. Not only that, but with a win, he'll go to a Super Bowl. And part of that conversation will be initially that Brady did so with better weapons. But that's going to fade away over time, because what the story will eventually be is that Brady got there without Bill.
Right. And he will be completely untouchable at that point. In terms of his legacy, in terms of being the greatest of all time, he will have cemented that. There is no, you know, I don't think that anybody could knock him off. We talked about Patrick Mahomes maybe being on that trajectory. I don't think that even Mahomes, if he continued to have the trajectory and the career that he could have, I don't think that you would be able to supplant Tom Brady off of the greatest of all time conversation. And many thought he wouldn't succeed without Belichick and McDaniels, that they were the secret sauce to his success. And he would make it very clear that Brady was actually one of the biggest reasons, not the only reason. I want to be very clear at that, because that would be extremely disrespectful to Bill Belichick and his greatness. But he would be the biggest reason for Belichick's success. And I think that would be one that really Tom Brady, I think, would really enjoy. You talk about the conversation that happened in the offseason and the parting ways of those two. And I saw other people say, well, that's not fair to Belichick. Belichick, if he had the chance to go and pick any team that he wanted, he probably would be in a much better position as well, like Tom did. Yeah, you're right, but also Belichick let Brady walk. He didn't give Brady what he wanted. That was a decision that he made. So Belichick kind of made that decision and put that upon himself as well. So I understand the premise of the argument, but at the same time, I don't think it's fair, because Belichick made that decision to allow Brady to go and walk, to not be a New England Patriot for life, and to turn a group from a group of defensive players and defensive minded team that the Patriots turned themselves into, back and shifted back into an offensive centric team like Tom wanted.
Now on to Jake, the quarterback I feel has the most to gain in terms of his legacy from a win this Sunday, and I'll tack on from a Super Bowl win, particularly for this quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has the highest career passer rating, 103.9, of any quarterback who's played 10 plus years. 2005 to 2020, a 103.9 rating. The closest is Russell Wilson, 2012 to 2020, but Aaron Rodgers still has several years on him. Aaron Rodgers has put together some of the most impressive single seasons we have seen from a quarterback in the modern era. Aaron Rodgers will go down as one of the best quarterbacks ever to play. Aaron Rodgers has one Super Bowl ring.
Mm-hmm.
And this conversation is one that many Seahawks fans have been having so far this offseason. The idea that, oh, the Seahawks are just what the Packers were with McCarthy. They've got a great quarterback, a great team, and they never make it all the way. Aaron Rodgers has a chance to get there again. And unlike Drew Brees, who's going to retire with one ring, and so many other greats who retired with one, maybe two rings, he has a chance to get back there, to cement that legacy, to tack on one more and say, I was one of the greatest to ever do it, and I proved it again. I made this impressive turnaround in my late 30s, and I got all the way.
Right.
He has the most to gain of these four quarterbacks with a win on Sunday.
Fully agree with that. I fully agree with that. Aaron Rodgers widely was considered the Patrick Mahomes before Mahomes came into the league, in terms of being arguably the most talented quarterback to ever play the game. So why people hold Aaron Rodgers in great esteem, and there was never really a question from the national media in terms of Aaron Rodgers, his greatness, is because he had that same type of hype surrounding him, and rightfully so, that Patrick Mahomes had early in his career. And you talk about that one Super Bowl. It has limited his legacy in terms of he is in a group lumped in with guys like Brees and you could name a couple others. But him getting that second Super Bowl, to me, and having one of his best seasons at age 37, and doing it in a way where he is still, like, physically, Stacey, he still has everything available to him. He's not a limited player like Peyton Manning was when he got his second Super Bowl. Not a limited player when, like Drew Brees, as he's finishing the tail end of his career, still has everything in the arsenal in his game. Rodgers would certainly be on pace to finish his career in lockstep with someone like Peyton Manning. You look at where he's at in terms of the overall career records, in terms of passing yards and touchdowns, and he already has the passer rating one as of right now. But you look at those two other statistics, Aaron Rodgers, if he's able to play till, let's say, he's 40, 42, he would be right up there with you know, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, and Tom Brady. And I think that Rodgers' legacy has absolutely that trajectory that he would be going on.
All right, it is 12:15, which means it's time for Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Mac and Jack's African Amber Ale.
With Jake and Stacey.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down to you, Jake. How difficult will it be for NFL teams to evaluate draft prospects before this year's draft, given that there will be no NFL Combine?
It's going to make it really difficult, because NFL teams really rely on the Combine to gather a lot of information, to gather the ability to sit in a room with a player and not just ask them questions and to get their answer, but to feel their presence. What are they like when they're in the room? Do they just soak up all the energy in the room and they are a guy that, you know, from a quarterback standpoint, that you could just feel is a tangible leader? Or do you have a player that really kind of cowers in those moments? There are certain things that coaches and evaluators are looking for in those interviews. DK Metcalf comes walking into the Seahawks, makes a huge impression on the Seahawks because he comes in without a shirt on, and Pete Carroll takes his shirt off, and they have this great moment, this great bonding moment, and that's what leads them later on to pick that player in terms of that interaction, not just the physical talents that they are evaluating. So I do think that you miss out on some of that, even if you're still able to interview the player via Zoom or you know, video conferencing. The other thing is that if you talk to any scout or talent evaluator, in-person evaluation is still very, very important to them. Very important to them. It's a very kind of old-school approach from that way. You could see it on film, you could see it on tape, you could watch a workout on film, but they want to see in person how this person moves, what they're like, how they interact with the people around them. All that stuff matters. So it's going to make it very difficult for NFL teams to evaluate prospects. They're going to have to get extremely creative. It's going to be a tremendous challenge.
Second down. Stacy.
Yes, Curtis.
You know, you've always struck me as a curious one.
Oh, thanks.
So with that in mind, which type of matchup are you curious about in this weekend's championship games?
Now, obviously, I said that the NFC Championship would be the most fascinating one in terms of quarterback legacy, but in terms of types of matchups, I'm looking at the Chiefs' running defense versus the Bills. The Bills leaned heavily into the pass against the Baltimore Ravens, and it worked in part thanks to a great performance from their defense as well, holding the Ravens to just 3 points. Also, shout out to Tucker for missing a couple field goals there.
Yes.
I don't know that the Bills are going to turn away from this. If you were going to enter a game against the Chiefs defense with a formula, it would be, hey, attack the ground game a bit. They're in the bottom third of the league in rushing yards allowed. I don't know that that's Buffalo's MO in this one, which is why I'm going with the Chiefs in this one, but if there is a way they beat them, I think it's that Josh Allen does it with his legs also. Rushing for a couple scores, rushing to pick up some first downs. The Chiefs could struggle easily against that. It is not their strength.
Interesting.
Third down.
Why I asked.
Jake. Now, I didn't tweet any stats last night, so I don't know if there was any that could truly blow your mind. But what stat did you see last night that had you thinking in different ways than normal?
Well, on Twitter, I saw Rob Statton, at Rob Statton.
He's from across the pond. I believe he's a Brit.
Yeah.
He tweeted.
No, keep going. Do the rest of the show.
He's across the pond. That's how.
That was your British accent?
I'm very British. No, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's like Cockney.
That was a little better.
It was a little better. Jake, just keep going. Okay. I'm really digging
the hole.
All right,
I'll continue to keep
going. Can we dump that?
No.
Rob Statton said, since 2015, here are the list of teams not to play in the NFC Championship game.
Oof.
Washington, the Giants, the Dallas Cowboys, the Detroit Lions, the Chicago Bears, and yours truly, the Seattle Seahawks.
I don't like that.
Gross. Everyone else has been to the NFC Championship game since 2015. That's not the company that I want to keep. That's not the company that I want to be in. And so when you ask why are Seahawks fans not overly thrilled with what's going on as of right now, there's good reason for that. Now, do you enjoy the ride of the success and the playoff wins and the consistency? Yes, absolutely. But to be mad at people for wanting a little bit more, to wanting to see this organization capitalize on the talent that this roster has, there's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, you should be frustrated because this is not the group that I want to be associated with. You have too talented of a roster and personnel to be associated with the rest of these teams that I just read off. I mean, that to me was gross.
You know what I think that is, Jake?
One, I kind of threw up a little bit in my mouth.
That's gross, that is.
Oh, gosh.
Fourth down.
Sorry.
Couple of texts to the Busy Heart Seltzer text line. Both from the 206. That was truly awful, Stacy. And then 206, please keep the accent going. So I think you've hit that nice medium we're looking for here.
Yeah.
Fourth down, Jake. How big of a loss will UW's defense suffer because of Pete Kwiatkowski's departure for Texas?
This was a huge loss. Huge loss for the Huskies. Pete Kwiatkowski, to me, was the glue, was the guy that kept everything together defensively. From in-house, in the building, just being a steadying force, and then also from a schematic standpoint. Jimmy Lake got a lot of credit, and rightfully so. He was the guy that was out in front. He was the leader. He was the alpha dog. He was the guy that was able to evaluate talent and recruit talent to come to that defense and play at such a high level. But Pete Kwiatkowski, make no mistake, was a brilliant, brilliant defensive coach. That's why Sark targeted him. That's why he lured him to Texas. And this is going to be one that I think is going to be heavily felt for this defense. You have, as the Husky, at Washington Huskies, you've been able to have the luxury of stability in your program, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, the side of the ball that you are relying on the most to win you games. You're not relying on your offense. You're relying on your defense with the style of game that you're playing. The run game, you want to pound people in the run game, you're okay grinding it out, having a low-scoring affair. But the reason why you're okay with that is because your defense is so elite. And losing a guy like Pete Kwiatkowski, to me, really, really hurts Washington. That is not going to be easily replaced whatsoever. And personally, I'm rooting for Kwiatkowski. I'm excited for him to see what he does at Texas. I think he's an excellent individual, and he's going to step into the big bright lights of Big 12 football and football in Texas and the demands that they have. We'll see if he fits the bill, but he's truly one of the best defensive coordinators in all of college football.
425, my ears are bleeding. Please stop, Stacy. Look, so, I wasn't proud of myself, but if you say something about a British accent, how do you not try?
You left the most important part out. As someone who lived in England.
That accent is painful. Look, accents aren't my personal greatest strength.
It's not going to stop you from doing them, though.
Heck no. Or should I say, no, it won't, Curtis. Okay. No, I don't even know if I'm Australian now. I won't do it again. I promise I won't do it again. All right, the timeline is coming up next. Normally, we try to fit in some fun stories, and we do have some for this one, including one about Tennessee football allegedly giving recruits cash payments disguised in bags of McDonald's. Would you be more disappointed to not get fries? I don't know. But there's also a really important story going around about the Mets firing their recently hired GM, Jared Porter. It's an important conversation to have. We're going to have it next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Jake and Stacy. This hour brought to you by the Pro Club. Reading you guys the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. Now, I've got some I'm going to get to here. This from the Dan Patrick Show this morning, by the way. The University of Tennessee football allegedly gave recruits cash payments disguised as bags of McDonald's. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being absolutely shocking and 1 being, I could have told you that. Where do you land on this one, Jake?
I could have totally told you that.
Like a negative 2.
100%. Yes. Yes. And one of my great recruiting stories ever was taking my trip to Tennessee and being offered money to go and play there.
Was it in a McDonald's bag? Arby's.
No, it was not in a McDonald's bag. It was just a very clear wink, wink, and nod that, hey, when you come here, we will take care of you. You won't have to worry about anything. We'll take care of you. Everybody, you know, in your family will be taken care of. Yeah, so it was a very nice welcome. They ended up in my top three. It was very appealing to me.
Great colors.
But, yeah, great colors. The stadium is amazing. Mm-hmm. But
checkerboard end zones, of course.
Yes, love it.
Ended up not making that decision, but, yeah, it was a high appeal. So this is not surprising to me at all.
Is that the Lane Kiffin years?
Yes, it was, Curtis.
Oh, interesting.
Yes,
interesting. Weird. Interesting. Oh,
yes,
Lane.
It was.
Okay, let's move on to the MLB. A huge story breaking late last night. It's co-written, co-reported by Jeff Passan and Mina Kimes of ESPN. The Mets, this is the fallout of it, have recently fired GM Jared Porter. And this is after this report came out that in 2016, he sent a female reporter unsolicited lewd photos and text messages when he was with the Cubs organization as a higher up there. And as part of this, I just want everyone to know, he sent 62 text messages with no response. You got to 43 and you were like, no, I'm going to, she might respond to the next. You got to 60 and kept going.
Yeah, there's something wrong with you at that point. I mean, really, really bad. And in all seriousness, there's two reactions that I have, Stacey. Mm-hmm. Number one, the immediate response that I see from people saying, well, what did she do to lead this guy on? Absolutely drives me wild. It's not that it doesn't matter because context matters, but too often are women reporters or women in sports often depicted as they are the reason why this individual did this. Why a man in a powerful position took advantage of a situation and tried to get something out of it that was inappropriate. And that to me is number one. That is the automatic assumption. Everybody should do their due diligence and everybody should research the story and make sure that the allegations are true, no question. But that can't be the number one thought process. And especially when this article comes out and there is a clear story, there's a clear set of laid out evidence that this was highly inappropriate and that the individual took it to a level, the GM took it to a level that was inappropriate, not the female reporter. So that first off. And then the second thing is, Stacey, what is it about men that just feel like they have this raw sexual magnetism about them that every woman that just happens to be nice to them or has a conversation with them.
You must definitely send those photos.
They're definitely attracted to me. Most men, I'm sorry, you're not good looking. You're not attractive.
Preach!
You're not somebody that women just look at and go, oh, I gotta have a piece of that. I gotta take this guy out to a date.
She's not playing hard to get, bro.
No, she's not. And I don't. It's unbelievable to me in those circumstances that kindness or politeness can be misconstrued as something more. Far too often, when it comes to workplace, when it comes to professional sports, it happens way too often.
That kindness and politeness is the most important part of this to me, because outside of the fact, way too many people are saying, "Oh, she should have been more clear." First of all, there's a language barrier here at play, which is reported in the article that she worked with a translator and a player on a team that I think she covered in her home country, and it's not disclosed where that is, to send a message to him saying, hey, this is really unprofessional. So outside of the language barrier that was already there, not answering 62 messages is a pretty clear indication that she doesn't want to respond to you and she's very uncomfortable. But even then, the critique that she's not clear ignores the very obvious power dynamics at play, which is, number one, the respective roles. She is a reporter and he is a higher up within the organization. And two, gendered social norms. And men and women are encouraged to be polite and friendly and professional. But I think that often there is weird pressure on women to be nice and to not be awkward, to not make it uncomfortable, and to just kind of like, okay, this person's being really uncomfortable, how do I not offend him while also get myself out of this situation? It was so obvious that this was the case when looking through the screenshots and reading the article that she's in this place where she is immediate, the second he makes sexual advances, she is very uncomfortable, doesn't respond. She does not respond from that point forward. And he continues to send 62 messages, including very lewd photos. Like, it is so incredibly unprofessional and irresponsible. And I don't know how anyone could read that story and be like, well, let's talk about what she did. Like, no, this isn't a guy that's just like, oh, I'm interested. Would you be interested in going for drinks? This isn't that situation.
No.
Stop trying to make it that. This is very clearly harassment. And why are any of us wasting any of our breath trying to justify it?
Absolutely. And that's part of the issue that I have as you look at this story. It's as clear cut as it gets. So when it comes to this, I hope that when you look at organizations, and especially in this town, that I hope that this isn't going on within organizations in this town. That I hope that it doesn't have to come out in a big scandalous article, that organizations are doing everything that they can to make sure that these power dynamics never happen within their organizations. And if there is, that they root it out as soon as possible. It's embarrassing. It's an embarrassing look on your organization, and there's no room for it.
There's not. And I think, too, there's really important lessons that many women already know that we can take from this, which is, I've seen people texting in already saying, this isn't sports talk. This is about a very prominent figure with a prominent team. It's absolutely sports talk. And this is also about an issue that happens often in the sports world. It's sports talk. Absolutely. Don't you want to make sports a more inclusive world for everyone that loves it? Well, that starts with having a conversation about this. One of the ways that this starts, too, that is just so insidious, is also with initially the lens of professionalism. The idea that he started the conversation from this work type relationship, mm-hmm. which her as a reporter is like, great, this is useful to me, and then transitioned into something entirely unprofessional. And that is such important context.
Yeah, 0 to 100.
Yeah,
and you found that out. I mean, there was another similar story that was going on that's still kind of an ongoing story and still investigations and things of that nature is with the Washington football team. You know, there was a massive culture of this type of behavior and environment, and that is trying to be rooted out. They're trying to work through that right now, but this happens far too often, and hopefully that there comes a point where organizations make a strong point to ensure that their people that they're putting in charge in leadership positions in their organization that are at the forefront of the conversations surrounding their teams, that they're acting in the appropriate manner. And as you said, being as inclusive as possible, that to me is, those are the main things that I take away from a story like this.
I'm going to end this. We've got about 30 seconds, but I'm going to end it with a much better story. Check this out. So the Bills and the Ravens obviously played each other in the divisional round. Lamar Jackson, was he concussed or was he just forced out of the game? He had to leave the game to go through concussion protocol. Bills fans, I believe this started during the game, have donated more than $360,000 to Jackson's favorite charity following that win.
So cool.
That's such a cool story.
Yeah, it's such a cool story. And when you talk about Buffalo Bills fans, everybody knows these guys as crazy fans that are jumping off of their cars onto folding
tables,
chairs,
Bills
breaking
Mafia.
Them. I don't know if anybody saw that video of a Bills fan had their kid.
Yes.
And that, you know, made
Bills
up folding chair.
Bills gender reveal party.
Yes, dumping it onto the cake. That was amazing. But people know Bills fans as kind of these crazy fans that do those antics pre-game at tailgates. But very quickly, people are realizing that these Bills fans are really, really fun, enjoyable fans that, I mean, in this story, it's a really cool one. And sports can bring people together in very, very unique ways.
Man, I don't even know who to root for in the AFC this weekend. It's going to be tough.
I think you do.
I think I do, but I don't want to say
I
it.
I think you do.
Okay. It rhymes with hills.
Yeah, it's Bills. Yeah.
All right. We have some new Jerry DePoto sound from today. We're getting right back into that Mariners conversation because they've got more than just a farm system, Jake. They're building a culture we haven't seen here in years. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, the Mariners have their virtual baseball bash that kicked off today, which means we've got some new sound, Jake. This is from General Manager Jerry DePoto. Now, we're going to go ahead and start. Cut number one. This is him saying they're playing the long game.
We're not in a rush. You know, we are here. We're playing the long game with our roster. We believe this is an opportunity to open a window and keep a window open. We've built a lot of prospect cachet. We've acquired and developed a number of young players for our roster, and we still have a long way to go for that roster to be fully developed and ready to compete consistently at a championship level. And we can't rush those young players because we'll do more harm than good.
Now, this is why this is especially important, because we've been talking earlier this morning about whether or not Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez are untouchable, the exciting members of the Mariners farm system. And he has a great quote coming up here about Kelnick and about when he expects that next wave of prospects to come up. We'll get there in a minute. But this is the most excited I can remember fans being in a long time about these prospects, Jake.
Well, certainly. I mean, when you have basically the the group that tells you where your farm system is and the group that also labels whose prospects are the best, and it is regarded as essentially the Bible to who are the next up-and-coming prospects, and you have two of them that are in the top five in Kelnick and Rodriguez, that's extremely exciting. You have two pitching prospects that are right in the middle of that conversation, in somewhere in the 30s and then the 50s with Gilbert and Hancock. That's really, really exciting in terms of the development of their farm system. But now, really what intrigues me is that point of where how you approach bringing these guys up. If these guys are as talented as everybody's saying that they are, now it becomes how do you bring them into the process of once they make it to the big league club that they can have the greatest impact on the field and through production, mm-hmm. but also in the clubhouse and with the culture, right? That to me is, I think, the most significant aspect of this. It's great to build this up to this point. Now can you go execute? Now can you help that those talented players come together and live up to those expectations? That's a delicate thing. And you hear Jerry DePoto talk about how they're not going to rush it. Their mantra, discipline is the shortcut. Discipline is the shortcut. So when you hear that, a player like Julio Rodriguez, who's regarded as the third best prospect in baseball, he is not going to be with the big league club. At least it's not anticipated that he will be with the big league club in 2021. That takes an incredible amount of discipline. And when you look at how they're trying to build this, I think a perfect example of this is, Curtis, you were talking about in our show prep, talking about Justice Sheffield and what that really showed you in the process of their mindset and how they're developing these guys.
Yeah, Sheffield came over from the Yankees organization in the Paxton trade, and he was terrible. I'll be honest, he was terrible when he first came over in AAA. His ERA was up near 7, and that kind of points to a guy who's, you know, maybe not going to reach the level that they had anticipated for him, but the Mariners stuck with it. They moved Sheffield down a level to AA. He regained a lot of confidence to the point where he came up to the Mariners organization at the end of 2019. Did okay, you know, certainly showed some signs of improvement. And then last year in 2020, he was one of the best rookie pitchers in the American League and has cemented himself as a part of this Mariners rotation going forward. If the Mariners had simply given up on Sheffield after 2019 or when he was going through it at the AAA level, who knows if they have that piece of their rotation locked down the way they do right now.
And that brings me a lot of confidence that A, they are patient with these prospects, and B, they trust their evaluation. They trust, instead of looking at Sheffield and expecting immediate results because he is on the older side of the prospect idea, that, hey, look, you can look at this player and say, he's not cutting it. We're getting him out of here, right? Just not doing it. But they stayed patient with him, and now you've put him in a position through that trust to build that confidence back up to where he can be a big-time part of your starting rotation. And talking with Jerry DePoto, he said that was one of the greatest developments for this team, for this ball club. And that gives me a lot of confidence with how they're going about the process of bringing up Jared Kelnick, how they're bringing up Julio Rodriguez and Logan Gilbert and all of those guys. Stacey, the big question to me now goes to, all right, if you're Scott Service and one of your main reasons for being here as the manager of this team is to set a culture and set a standard, mm-hmm. can you fully do that without your young core? Or do you need that young core to come along with everybody else like Marco Gonzalez and Kyle Lewis to fully cement that standard moving forward, that attitude, that winning attitude? And I think here in cut number three, Jerry DePoto talks about how young teams tend to gel quickly.
Young teams tend to gel quicker than you might think. We can't go in expecting that we're going to run to the top of the American League West, but I think we can set the goal of competing for a playoff spot, and we'll see how it goes. And if we take a step toward that in 2021, I think that would be a great achievement for our organization.
I like that outlook. I think it's a good way to look at the year. This isn't a patchwork. There's nothing wrong with a patchwork team, a team where you're putting together stars that you're signing on or trading for in order to contend. There's nothing wrong with that. The Mariners have tried to take that approach. Many other teams have successfully taken that approach. Nothing wrong with it. I love the approach that Seattle is taking here with this young core. I don't think they become a true contender until, Jake, to answer that question, that young core is there, which means I don't think that happens in 21. What I do think you start to see in 21, like DePoto said, is that step forward. And one thing that you have to look forward to, like DePoto said, is that when all these guys are coming up together and when all of them are young and have the same focus, some of that chemistry and some of that gel process that mm-hmm. tends to happen just happens naturally when they all want the same thing and when they're all hungry.
Yeah, and you look at the personalities, Kyle Lewis, Jared Kelnick, you look at Marco Gonzalez. I think you throw in Evan White in that conversation. These are guys that are extremely confident. And you put those group of guys together, I think that you have a unique environment. And you know, Jerry DePoto here in cut number five talks about the next wave of prospects when he expects those next waves or that next wave to come up. Gilbert Kelnick, Cal Raleigh, Trammell, they are all part of that equation.
The obvious for us are Logan Gilbert, who I think among our group is the closest to major league preparedness. He's just where he is emotionally, what he does physically. He was outstanding at the alt site during the summer last year. We do have to be conscious of where his innings are. And, you know, my preference would be with all young players is just to give them the opportunity to onboard at the appropriate pace. But Logan stands out, as does Jared Kelnick, Cal Raleigh, potentially Taylor Trammell, who we are still learning a lot about. But, you know, he's another of those that we haven't yet seen at the major league level.
So in that conversation, Stacey, it excites me a lot. And I hope that they continue to stay with discipline as the shortcut. And do you need eventually to have a group that you or somebody that you add from the outside who has that World Series experience and has that veteran experience of a winning culture to be able to help show this clubhouse, these young players, how to get it done? You could do it that way, or you could do it in the way that the Houston Astros did. In the fact that all of their star talent, all of their leadership was grown in-house. And that's what I'm excited to watch and really pay attention to here in 2021 is if some of that can get established with some of these really, you know, really exciting young talented players for the Mariners.
We are going to be having two very fascinating conversations about two Seattle teams this offseason. The first about the Mariners is about a team that is working toward contention with a really young, exciting core, one that people are more excited about than I can remember in ages. That's fantastic. The other is about a team that is expecting to contend right now and for some reason hasn't been able to get back there. So what's the missing piece? How can they do it? Brock Heward is going to join us next. We're getting back to the Seahawks, specifically with that OC search. This is Jake and Stacey.